Okay, everybody, welcome to Drat and Drake Veterinary Podcast. Today, and this is always something that I keep saying is very special, and there's always, I think every guest is special for their own right, but I was able to connect with this individual, and we have quite a bit of similarities. I think there's kind of a lot of shared passion, kind of how we view veterinary medicine and communication. And so before I won't go into such tremendous detail, but let me go ahead and introduce Dr. Kate Eldon, who is recently been hired as the Chief Medical Officer of Dutch, which is one of the leading telemedicine platforms around. So I'm going to have her take the floor and kind of give a formal introduction.
Hi there. Nice to meet you, Dr. Tam. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time. I know you've got to be busy with all the things you're doing. So tell me, kind of, how did you get in this position? I read the Business Wire article. How did you go from equine to general practice into medical director and now part of tech?
Yeah. And thank you for that introduction. I mean, the journey has been a wild ride and been so fun. And I'm so excited to have started as Chief Medical Officer at Dutch. I do want to say, though, at home, I have two young boys, ages 5 and 7, and they call me the Chief Mom Officer.
You're a boy mom.
Oh. I'm a boy mom.
Oh, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So they're on this journey with me. I'll just dive right in. So I started out as a little girl that was absolutely just obsessed with horses. And that's what I went to vet school to do. And was president of the Equine Medicine Club, went to Colorado and worked at Littleton Equine Medical Center. Had just the best time of my life. After that, came to Southern California and was working as one of those vets driving around the countryside with my technician and my x-ray machine, taking care of horses of the rich and famous. I thought I had landed.
Even though Southern California had that many equine. Is that a pretty... Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, the rich and famous, of course, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. There are horses in Malibu and Calabasas and all those areas. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of famous people that I cannot disclose have horses.
Sure.
They ride themselves and their kids ride. So, yeah, so I spent some time as a horse vet, and then I got kicked. I got kicked pretty bad doing a pre-purchase exam. And, yeah, forced me to pause and kind of look at life and the things that I wanted. And I reconnected with my now husband and started doing some small animal.
There's a saying where, like, I think in fighting, was it Mike Tyson who says it, where like everybody has a game plan until you get punched in the face?
That's exactly
it seems like that's exactly what happened to you. Obviously,
that's exactly what it was. Yeah. And I was at this place in my life and my career where I thought I had made it, everything was going well. And so was my husband. We had known each other since high school. So when we reconnected, I was like, oh, wow, you turned out okay. he had a great job, was like top of his fitness. And then he also got hit by a car right around when I got kicked by a horse. And it was one of these things where it's like, well, anybody can be nice and fun when things are going well, but it's really when you're presented with adversity and then you have to work through this kind of like, what do you do in a difficult situation? That's when you see what people are really made of. And we saw that in each other, this kind of like fortitude and positive attitude. And so, yeah, then it was a happily ever after.
That's amazing.
After that. Yeah. And I got into small animal medicine thinking about, oh, wow, okay, I might want to live in a city and have less after hour emergency calls.
I know, right? Making two times more probably.
Yes, totally. The economics of the specialty are different. So I worked in general practice, in corporate and private practices. I did some rehab. I'm trained in acupuncture. And I was working in a hospital that was newly built. We had just staffed it up. And we were starting to get some return clients, getting things going when COVID hit.
Mm.
And so then our hospital shut its doors, this brand new shiny hospital. And I started doing some telemedicine. And I worked with a couple of different services. I did chat-based telemedicine only, where I would be running like four different chats with clients about what's going on with their pet, all having them open at
You're
the same time.
insane. Okay, wow.
And then I would be doing some video calls. I worked with a couple of different platforms doing telemedicine. And then our hospital doors opened, things started quieting down with COVID, and I was doing less telemedicine, although still some within the day-to-day workflow, and got a sense of operationalizing telemedicine in a clinic floor that's also practicing. And then I was recruited to go be the medical director at a hospital that I grew up taking my dogs and cats to as a little kid, and was working there. And then really started realizing, oh my gosh, we need to be doing telemedicine here. There is this population of pets that are not getting any care. And for certain pets, like animals with extreme anxiety, where they come into the clinic, the owner wants to talk about anxiety, and the pet is just terrified. You can't even do an exam on them. That's a great telemedicine case. Or cats that are having lower urinary tract signs where you've ruled out disease, but the purpose is to discuss how to change the environment and reduce stress in the household. Like, there were these scenarios where I'm like, we need to have telemedicine in our day-to-day practice. So I worked on building a telemedicine program for several hospitals in Southern
Wow.
California.
Yeah, actually, funny
So.
enough, my wife is a behavior residency trained. And so a lot of her time, especially during her residency, was doing telehealth just because exactly what you're saying. How can you bring a severely stressed animal into the hospital when it also helps her assess the patient better if she's able to see them in their natural environment? Out of curiosity, I don't know if you know the stats on this, but what are some of the major reasons as to why these patients that aren't getting care, why they're unable to get into the actually go into the brick and mortars and physically be present?
Yeah, so I mean, the number one thing, I think it's really twofold. The number one thing is cost, and then that's kind of the obvious one is pet care is expensive. I saw it myself. I present people with an estimate, and it's overwhelming, and they leave doing nothing. Even if you communicate and really engage with them, some people just can't afford, or some people just don't engage at all because they're too concerned about the cost of things. And then the other thing is a lot of the time when pet parents want to bring their pet in, or where they're able to bring their pet in, is not necessarily when the hospital's open or has availability, right? And as a mom, I can 100% relate to this. It's like, okay, you've got an appointment at 10 a.m. tomorrow, but I work and my kids are in school. And so a lot of the time, what we see and what we're seeing at Dutch is when people are requesting appointments is usually in this like kind of afternoon, 4 to 8 p.m. hour when hospitals are closing, or on the weekends and in the middle of the night. And so all those things go into the category of access for me. It's like, well, maybe the clinic's 2 hours away. Maybe it's not open during the hours that people need, but cost and access are I think the two biggest reasons why people are getting no care. And we saw from PetSmart Charities saying 52% in that recent report of
Wow.
pets are not getting any veterinary care. We are putting out a report from our data from our over 100,000 members showing that 75 million pet parents are skipping care due to cost and access. So those are the two main drivers that we're seeing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I can tell for I work primarily emergency, so I definitely have witnessed the financial issues being the biggest thing. And it's unfortunate too, just because it really takes a toll on the emotional turmoil. I mean, obviously in the ER, their patients are sick and they're worried for their actual lives. But then there's this emotional component about how much this is going to cost. And that oftentimes can sometimes create for a bit of a difficulty with just the dynamic with your client relationship. So, I mean, this is kind of obviously the billion-dollar question. How can we, I guess, as veterinarians, right? How can we, and knowing that telemedicine is really a good medium for this, but how can we do more, or how can we do better to kind of provide access to these patients?
Yeah, I think telemedicine is absolutely part of the solution. There are so many concerns that pet parents have that can be resolved from the comfort of their home. So to not help them in that way to me just seems like I took an oath to relieve animal suffering, and that oath is transferable across state lines. And I that's how I guide my decisions. Every decision, every patient, every time. And so I think that our profession is a bit of at a crossroads right now, and veterinarians are getting caught in the middle of these th this transition. The cost of vet care is rising, right? And there's a few things that are happening all at once. And what some people don't realize is these things are not in the control of the veterinarian. It's like pressures that are being applied. And I have to sometimes remind my own like friends and family that it's not like your veterinarian is like out to get you, but they're under a lot of these pressures of so the advancements in veterinary care are real, right? We're able to offer this human quality care for our patients, which is wonderful, but it also it is not doable for a lot of people, right? Especially in our current
Correct.
economy. There's the drivers of private equity has come in. Private equity owns about a quarter of private practices
Yes.
and about 75% of emergency practices,
Yes,
like
they
I'm
do.
sure. And not all of that is bad, right? So the injection of capital into our space can be good. It provides some stability and some infrastructure and allows our teams to sometimes purchase better equipment and things like that. But also with having private equity in our space, there's this tendency to want to optimize a healthcare business for a return on an investment.
Correct.
And when that
Yeah.
happens, prices go up and access narrows, and there's a strain put on the veterinarian. And I don't know a single veterinarian that wants to make care unaffordable for patients. It's so,
Yeah,
yeah.
you bring up it makes me think of when you were saying how the veterinarians, like, we're just trying to do our best. And then you start having a lot of us newer generation vets kind of say, I don't know, I just work here. It's a very common, like, kind of associate thing. And you go into this kind of burnout, right? Especially during COVID, which we've all experienced. How, just kind of with your experience as medical director, as kind of you've been in a position where you've been able to really oversee and lead a lot of these newer generation vets. What do you think are like some of the best ways to inspire them, us, from if I include myself, to kind of find solace or at least find some way of wanting to do more, right? I think from what I see, some vets are kind of hesitant. I've seen a lot of people from like the negotiations in vet school where, you know, okay, well, I don't want to I don't want to work weekends. I only want to work 3 to 4 days a week. And there's this kind of, but I also want $350,000 a year in salary. And there's this kind of, do you say that there's a bit of an imbalance? I know I'm kind of rambling on my question here, but acknowledging that there's maybe a bit of an imbalance, how do you think we can inspire veterinarians to kind of dive into this type of connection with pets and clients that need our help?
Yeah, and I mean, there were a couple of good points and good questions that you asked in there. And I think the first one that came to my mind is I think about each interaction that I have with a pet parent as a relationship. It's a new relationship. There is a person behind every pet. And I know some vets that say this, like, hey, I went to vet school because I prefer to work with animals. Well, I got a news flash for you. Every pet is
Oops.
connected to a person, and you must develop a relationship with that person if you want to be able to affect the care of the pet. And so each interaction is a relationship with a pet parent, and they have different means, they have a different lifestyle, they have their own wants and dreams for their pet's care, and it's important to treat each relationship as an individual and understand what their goals are for their pet. And the goals are, there's a huge spectrum. Even in my own lifetime, I've seen this evolution of pets being outdoor animals to moving in the home to moving
Yeah.
into our bedrooms to now sleeping in the bed
They're
with
the children
people,
now.
or they're the children. Most pet parents today consider their pets as important members of the family. And we still have a spectrum of how this transition has happened so quickly that people see their pets differently. And it's worth a conversation with each pet owner to understand where they're coming from and what their goals are. So I think, because as vets, in order to get to where we are, we have a tendency to hold ourselves to a high standard. I know I do. And we're trained on how to use this human level care to save every pet and to be able to give them the best of the best. Well, sometimes a pet parent, what they want is a good solution now. They don't necessarily a good affordable solution now. They don't always need or want the best, but we won't know that if we don't have a conversation, a real conversation with them about what their needs are. And that takes slowing down, which I always have to remind myself to do too, and just saying the words of, is this going to work for you? Is this what you were thinking? Asking questions to people.
Yeah, this is a frequent thing I always bring up on my podcasts, and like one of my I'm in my now, well, mid 30s, but kind of approaching the 40s at this point. But the life lesson I learned in my 30s was that people really just want to feel like they're being heard, and they want to feel like they're acknowledged, right? And that's something that I think is stands true, especially in veterinary medicine, or I guess any customer service thing. And kind of also taking a tangent into kind of where we are with technology now with AI. I do foresee that the value that we're going to continue to bring as humans is really that human touch and that ability to make people feel seen. With everything you said, with just kind of being able to communicate effectively, obviously again inspiring these doctors to kind of be able to establish that connection firsthand. How do you see that kind of, how do you see the future of veterinary medicine as a whole?
I love that you bring up AI, because I don't think we can have a podcast and not talk
Not
about
in
it these days. And
2026.
that I know. I love it. And I actually love the pet parents that come to me that have just openly said, like, I ran this through ChatGPT, or even if they don't say it, like, you can kind of tell. But it's a certain kind of educated pet parent, and I usually have to do less explaining because they've already got some knowledge. But where we're at with it right now is that the AI can't establish a VCPR. And I think we should come back to defining and talking about the VCPR a little bit.
Sure.
But that is something that the AI can't do. Can't establish a VCPR, can't diagnose and prescribe, right? It can get you close with a diagnosis, but the treatment then relies on this judgment of the human being, the veterinarian. I think have you heard of the Overton window? This is one of my favorite
No,
analogies to think
please
about.
explain.
Yeah, so the Overton window is a political construct, and it's this idea that you can shift from something that think that it first is unthinkable to then it would be unthinkable not to have it. So like gay marriage is a great example where at first this is presented and the general population is like, that's ridiculous. How could we ever? No way, no how. Then it becomes pretty normal. Like, that's okay, sure. Yep, that's what we're doing. And then it's to the point to where to not allow that seems wrong, right? And so we're somewhere here with AI where, okay, we're getting to the point where people understand that it's a great tool. We're using AI scribes. Okay, it's lobbing up di potential differential diagnoses that can be used, that can be helpful. We must always have a human in the loop. I think we will get to a place to where not using AI as part of our tools and our toolbox for our patients is, we're going to look back and be like, why would we not have used this to gather this massive amount of data that we already have on the pet, their previous records from specialists, from things like that. I think we are moving in that direction, and we're still
We're still
somewhere.
figuring it out. We're
We're
still
still
figuring it out.
figuring it out.
Some
Yeah,
people
we're
abusing it
definitely.
more than they should, and yeah. Now,
And
you
I
know,
do,
oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do think it's real that veterinarians remember to use their own diagnostic brains and not just, and make sure you're always using this like another tool in your toolbox, because I do find errors. I use AI a lot every day and I find errors all the time. And so it's going into with a mindset of, hey, this is something else that can help me. And just like if I were to get a report from a specialist on a radiograph that I sent in, I get that readout. I read it and make sure it's aligned with all of the other clinical data that I have in my mind before I just present it to the owner as this is the end all be all. So, yeah.
No, like that's a great answer. Now, I want to obviously acknowledging telehealth and a lot of what you're representing. If we change now our topic of AI and we replace it with telehealth, because I can imagine we're probably in a current state right now where the acceptance of telehealth, not even let's just say veterinary medicine, but even just the overall human healthcare industry, it's not exactly widely accepted, right? People, there's still some friction with either old school people or just any type of individual who doesn't quite believe in the technology. What are you currently seeing telehealth face? Where do you see the future of it? I know we've talked about a lot of some of the pros and cons, but I'd like to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, we, I mean, I think we're at a place where some people are trying to pretend like telemedicine is not here and not happening. And it's like saying the internet is just a fad that's going to go away. I think that's ridiculous, people putting their head in the sand. And there can be a lot of heated rhetoric around telemedicine, but what the data is showing is that telemedicine can help people, that pet parents want it, that actually veterinarians want to do it. And it's really the laws that are getting in the way. California is a good example. So we had AB 1399 that was passed and af that allowed a virtual VCPR to be established. And after
Correct,
that,
right.
we had a 13,000%
Wow.
increase in our cases coming to us and people wanting to have appointments. That's not like an error. That's like, that's
That's
13
incredible.
three zeros. Yeah. And so, and the demand for us onboarding and hiring vets is more than we can absorb. So more people apply, more veterinarians apply to our platform than we have the ability to onboard. And a lot of that, I think, is because of flexibility and you can work. You can work after hours. You can work when you have time. You can work from home. So telemedicine is here and here to stay. And a lot of the frustration comes from regulatory VCPR laws.
Yeah, that can kind of stiff arm you. I mean, I guess the thing is, I mean, when we just look at it strictly from an economic standpoint, right, and business, if the supply is there or the demand is there, it's gonna have to. You can't just say no. Like it's eventually there's gonna be enough potential revenue where people are gonna have like those regulations will be lifted. Ideally, and that's kind of I think what follows, correct?
I mean, I hope so. So we know that the demand is there for pet parents. Like California is a great example of that. But in states where there are laws against having a virtual VCPR, which we should pause here to talk about, the veterinary client patient relationship is
Yes.
really, it's a legal construct, right, that allows the veterinarian to be sanctioned or sued in the eyes of the law. And it's written in a lot of practice acts that were written a long time ago to explain this relationship and when it can be formed. And it's you have consent from the pet parent, the veterinarian has sufficient knowledge and decides to take on care. But other than that, there nowhere in the practice act does it say that a veterinarian has to use a stethoscope. to do an exam to establish a VCPR, or that they have to do a rectal on every pet in order to establish a VCPR. But where things have gone with telemedicine, and for reasons that I just don't understand, it's there's this, you cannot establish a VCPR virtually. And it's frustrating, and I think it's actually one of the most egregious things that's happening to veterinarians today is someone else saying when your judgment does and does not count, right? And as a horse vet, I started out as a horse vet. We do a lot of telemedicine over the phone in the middle of the night. I don't think like equine medicine could exist without that. So this idea that two-thirds of the vets that work on our platforms also work at brick and mortar practices during the day, and then they're working with Dutch when they have extra time. And so to just say like, oh, your judgment counts during the day when you're in a clinic and then online, but you can no longer decide if you can handle something virtually or if it needs to go in. That to me,
Doesn't make
it's like,
sense.
it doesn't make sense. When did we stop trusting our veterinarians? Why does the geography matter? I think that more veterinarians should be up in arms and calling that into question, because we all take this oath, right? And sometimes the Practice Act butts up against the oath. And at the end of the day, the veterinarian's getting caught in the middle of, well, I want to help this pet parent.
But I
And I think
can't.
that's where burnout happens, right? But I can't. And it's hard.
Yeah. So, what are the limitations right now then? So, let's say I'm over in South Florida, and let's say we go to a, I do telehealth in a to a client in a state that I cannot establish this relationship. So, of course, it doesn't stop me from being able to consult with them and share my thoughts and even receive money for my services. However, can you tell me some of the limitations with this type of, with the current laws and regulations?
Yeah, so every state is different. So in Florida, you can establish a VCPR virtually and diagnose and prescribe for a pet parent as long as you're licensed in Florida.
So is it if the client is also in Florida, or could they be in a completely different state?
Oh, this is a great question. So your client has to be in Florida where you're licensed, but you yourself, you could be on a boat in Fiji. You could be
That's
anywhere
how
that
you
you
guys sell Dutch. Okay, I get it now.
No, I mean, we do have some
I
veterinarians
mean,
who they go
Lily,
on long sabbaticals. Yeah,
100%.
totally.
Not gonna be
But you
doing everything during your vacation. You got time to make some money. Come
Yeah,
on.
and that kind of flexibility is honestly something that a lot of our veterinarians love. Or yeah, they're taking a few months off and they're working on the platform. Something that it surprised me when I first started doing telemedicine actually was this, the feeling of people are so appreciative when you can help them from the comfort of their home. It reminded me of like this early emergency equine medicine where early on, they had, when I was an intern, we were doing a lot of emergency. And it's just so rewarding because you don't have to do much. You just show up and help them out a little bit, and people are so grateful,
Participation
right? It's,
award. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. It's the middle of the night. And a lot of telemedicine feels that way, even though there is critical thinking that's involved. People are from they're sitting on their couch at home. They're with their newborn baby. They didn't have to lift their 100-pound dog into the car. And even though you might be telling them, yeah, actually, you do have to go in for this, or you're going to have to bathe that pet two or three times a week for the next couple of weeks, even though you might be telling them something that requires effort on their part, at least they didn't have to go into a clinic to get that information to
Yeah.
know if they had to go in or not. So people are so grateful for the help.
I would imagine the
There's
expectation of the client too is like they know that there are limitations, like some limitations of not physically being in a place with a pharmacy, with x-rays, with diagnostics. They know that you're not able to touch the patient. And there's kind of this understanding, okay, well, I just need guidance. And if you can prescribe me something, that's amazing, right? It's almost the
ex
cherry on top. So.
Exactly. And the expectations are different, and it does filter out the pet parents. These people are coming to us knowing that, at least right now, we don't have point of care at home diagnostics. And so about 90% of the time, our data shows we are able to resolve their issue that they came to us for through telemedicine and shipping meds. We ship meds 2 to 3 days, usually they get there. Or we
That's
can
great.
transfer to a local pharmacy if that's what's indicated for the pet parent.
Okay. Yeah, so for vets, why do Uber or Lyft on the side when you can stick with your degree and from the comfort of your home or the Bahamas do telehealth?
It's really rewarding to be able to help people. And the way our platform's set up is people can request to come back to you. So you really do develop a relationship with pet parents.
That's cool. Are there often follow-ups too? Is that something that can be established on the platform? It's just kind of that you that the provider would kind of establish with the client? Is that
Absolutely. So we will follow up with, we have automated follow-ups with pet parents that happen after their visit, the day after their visit, and a couple weeks after their visit. And then I usually tell my clients to message me on the app, which feels just like a text message. So pet parents, we have an app in beta for the pet parents right now, but the veterinarians all, we all have an app where we can just message and text with our clients to make it pretty easy. So that's really fun. They'll send you a message and be like, hey, fluffy skin's looking a lot better, or hey, it's not looking better. And then you can go from there. So it's pretty easy communication. And then they can send videos and pictures. And I try to encourage pet parents to do that actually ahead of the call, because sometimes the picture is just better than what you're going to see on the video, or a
Yeah,
video of the
100%.
pet coughing. Like, they don't ever do the things on cue, just like in an exam room. And that the app allows them to upload those things pretty easily.
Okay. It's really cool that Dutch has a position for chief medical officer. And obviously being able to select you as the role. The idea typically, the traditional CMO of at least for a hospital, right, is kind of the equivalent of a medical director, is at least from my very limited understanding of things. Can you tell me a little bit more about kind of the direction that you're given and actually also the one that you provide for the company?
So a lot of what I do is similar to what you describe as this kind of clinical director. I was just emailing with one of our doctors. We have about 200 doctors that work for us on the platform. And I was just emailing with them about a pet parent that had, or their dog was experiencing some PUPD. And we're talking about, okay, that needs to be one of these things that flags a veterinarian to say, hey, we should be thinking about this pet needs to go in and to have some blood work and an in-person exam. And we're building these guardrails. I see us at Dutch as leaders in the telemedicine space. And with that comes the responsibility to put these guardrails in place and to educate vets and pet parents for things that we can and cannot do virtually. And one of our core values is always we're here for the pets, and each communication is a relationship. So if someone's like, hey, doc, there's no way I'm going to do that, we're not going to not help people, but we're establishing these kind of guardrails to say, hey, I really encourage you to go get some lab work here. So there's that clinical director aspect. There's things like, what do we carry in our pharmacy, things like that. And then there's also an awareness and education component for the general public and veterinarians to understand what is telemedicine, what is it not. That's something that I hear a lot, is people say, oh yeah, I know what Dutch is. But then as we talk more, they don't actually know. They have no idea what we're doing here. Each person that becomes a member with our platform, they get a video visit with a licensed veterinarian. You get unlimited video visits with a licensed veterinarian with your membership. And depending on whatever state the pet is located, your veterinarian's going to be licensed in that state. We work within the guardrails of the regulatory guardrails. We give doctors a lot of clinical autonomy, so they're using their judgment. We trust doctors to use their judgment based on each individual. And so those components, as well as trying to lead the way and set the example for regulatory changes, right? I think that a lot of people that are within the veterinary community concerned about telemedicine, thinking it's the wild, wild west, showing them through our data that actually it's safe. We're helping pets. There are standards that we are putting into place. Of course, we should have guardrails. The question is whether geography should be one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. I appreciate such honest, real, and passionate answers, Doc. I have one more question for you, and I am going to pivot away from kind of telehealth, but it kind of encompasses everything that we've talked about so far. Of course, you mentioned your two boys. We've talked about a lot about leadership, communication, understanding, boundaries, guardrails, the future. All I can think about is my own children, and just with my new identity as a parent, the whole philosophy of child rearing. Where has you being a parent, being a partner with your husband, teamwork as an individual with raising these children, how is it kind of interconnected with your leadership as a veterinarian? I would imagine your parenting has helped you be a better doctor, but also your doctoring has helped you be a better parent. Can you give me more insight on just kind of reflecting on that experience?
I love that call out. And I've had friends ask me, because I've said that same thing before too, actually, that I think being a parent has made me a better doctor and opened this
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
door of empathy. Because I tell people, like,
1,000%.
okay, you're going to give them this medication 3 times a day. And I'm like, now as a mom of two, I'm like, oh, I'm really going to try for that once a day. Yeah, I think so. My role of having worked in practice and that you as an associate through medical director, through now chief medical officer, my time to be at home has evolved over the years, and my family has seen that. And before taking this role with Dutch as chief medical officer, I knew that the time commitment was going to be more. Plus, I'm so passionate about what we're doing and the opportunity to make change, that I knew that my own mental load for work was going to be bigger. So I sat my boys down at the dinner table. We try to have dinner together as many days a week as we can so that we can sync back up and see how everybody's day was. But I sat my boys down, all three of them, I include my husband in that. And
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
Yeah. And I said, and I started by thanking them for all the things that hadn't happened yet, because I hadn't taken the role yet. And I said, I just want to thank you guys for really supporting me in my career, because I am really passionate about what I do as a vet, and my job is important to me. And I know this is going to take some more participation from the family and some more independence from you guys. And I just laid out the things that are real for us in our day to day. I'm going to be asking you to get dressed on your own in the
Not the
morning,
boys. We can't do
doing the
that.
I know, but they are though. So I thank them for all the things that I actually wanted them to do and that I saw us needing. I'm going to be traveling with this. And so I expect that you guys are going to be getting your own snacks and helping, telling the grandparents that you need to go back and get your water bottle at school so that you have one for the next day. And they rise the occasion. And so just kind of like anticipating the needs of the demanding job have come a long way, and putting it out there, just calling out that, hey, I'm going to be working more, or, and here's why, right? And I think that example that I'm setting for them, I'm proud of at the end of the day. My boys know that you can have a job that you're passionate about and proud of, and they can rise to the occasion, which is a beautiful thing. And then the time that we spend together, I really focus on being present and having it be quality, because it's family time. Same with my husband. It's more about quality than quantity at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the days are probably going by fast, just kind of given where we are in life at this point. Huh?
100%.
Well said, Doc. Thank you so much for just spending the time connecting with me. I'd love to see. Are you going to be any conferences anytime soon? Is that a part of your job description? Or
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. So I was just putting together the list of the conferences. Now that we're over VMX and Western Vet Conference, there is, although they're going to be having a second Western Vet Conference in Nashville this year. I think it was the first year they're doing it. And I was debating going to that one, Nash Vegas, are they going to call it? My
I dig
friend
it.
said that to me. So that's a good question. I need to lay out my schedule, but that's the one that comes to the top of my list. Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah. Well, again, everybody, if you want to have like a final couple of things to say, especially about just Dutch and just kind of the direction that you're trying to push this community, I'll kind of want to give you the floor. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much. And thank you for having me on the podcast. I want to start by saying that it's always a pleasure and I love what you're doing. And I
Thank you.
encourage any listeners to listen to all of your podcasts because they're all
Oh,
fantastic.
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think like at the end of the day, takeaways for veterinarians would be to remember why you became a vet in the first place. Every day, every interaction, telemedicine or not, we take an oath to relieve animal suffering. And with these pressures that are on us, I think that is the best lighthouse at the end of the day. And yeah, and then I think for pet owners, if you're interested in making changes and making telemedicine more available in your community, you can make a difference by reaching out to lawmakers. You can go to savepuppies.com and help us in making this access easier. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Eldon, for coming to my show.
Thanks for
Well,
having me. You
of
take care.
course. All right, we'll catch you guys all later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.